Hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind, WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. Positively minded life is very, very difficult at times. As we've said, sometimes stuff just mounts up. Illness, disasters, you know, stuff like that, bad stuff. Taxes, today's tax day. So one of the questions always when you get it to tax day, you get into finances and money. And money, I mean, just this whole idea of money that we talked about, the psychology of money. Money is everywhere you look, they're talking about finances and bank defaults and stock markets and subprime loans. It's scary. It's gotten to a point where if you pick up a newspaper, they talk about the new strip malls and how they're all falling down because there are no more buyers and people aren't shopping. So are you touched by money scares? Are you touched by it? Of course you are. There was a study done in Great Britain, in England, where they tried to take a look at debtors, and they said, okay, we have two kinds of debtors. Let's do a study. Is there such a thing as a happy debtor? And is there such a thing as an unhappy debtor? And they studied, and they were able to divide people who are generally deeply in debt into two categories. There's one category of people who have things, but they borrow. So in other words, they like to borrow money. They get mortgages, they get their cars on credit, but they have money in the bank. So they're indebted, and they feel that they're indebted on one level. On the other level, they do have possessions that can't be touched. So these people can't be considered poor, even if they have more debt than they have money, because they have a lot of things. They have fancy cars, they have houses, they so on and so forth. And they basically live in the future. They basically say, whatever I own will appreciate in value, or the money I make will increase so that everything will be paid off and I'm going to live well. And they're professional debtors. And these people owe money to everybody. Owe money on their credit cards, they owe money, and they are not particularly unhappy. Now, the only time that they've become unhappy is recently, when they've seen that, you know, the prices of things are not going up, their values are not going up, and they're getting caught having to pay on things. I know people who have so much credit card debt that the amount of interest on the credit card debt is more than their income. Now, that's pretty tough. Because credit card debt is very funny. Credit card debt has all kinds of hidden credit card charges. If you have a credit card debt, it could be at a rate. I know a man who had to pay off his mortgage. So he took a cash advance from his credit card company to pay his mortgage. Didn't want to lose his home. They charged him 30%, 29% on that. Plus they charged him other things, you know, other points for no reason whatsoever. Just hidden little charges. So he took a bill that would have been normally $2,000, and it was automatically, because it was 30% higher, it was now $2,600. And he just figured, I just got to get past this moment. Many people who are impoverished feel that way. I just have to get through the day. If you have children, and you want your children to be able to get through, you know, to get them food and get them what they need, kind of your thinking goes to, I will take debt in the future because I have to get through the day. Now, I'm not saying that's not the way to do things. Clearly that catches up on you. Clearly that eventually becomes a problem. Clearly it's not the wisest thing in the world to do, but sometimes it's all you could do. What happens to you and your concerns about money? Do you know poverty? Do you know what it is, other than seeing it, other than, you know, having it around you? Have you ever lived in it? Have you ever been in the middle of it? I both lived in it personally when I was a child, and I watched as I was an adult in helping people in certain environments and certain cultures where I kind of put myself in the middle of it again. I know it. I'm comfortable with it. I'm aware of it. Maybe you're not. Maybe it's just something you see. Maybe it's something you fear. So let's talk about whether you're impoverished or not impoverished. If you're in a family, and it's a family of loving, very loving people, how poor do you feel? If you're in a family where the love is unavailable because your parents are so concerned with trying to make things work, either they're working hard or they're getting drunk or they're doing something to make things work, and love is not available to you, then are you more impoverished? What's more impoverishing, not having money for a protein that you could eat, or not having an available parent? I think very often people who are financially challenged feel like children in the world who don't have a parent who will love them. I think it's like kind of a mental set. It's a mental set of feeling like a second-class citizen. There was a study done, and there's always a study done. This is by Paul Krugman. Poverty in early childhood poisons the brain. That was the opening of an article in Saturday's Financial Times, summarizing research presented by the American Association for the Advancement of Science. The article explained neuroscientists have found, now neuroscientists are the ones who now study the brain through imaging, you know, they could see what's happening in the brain, have found that many children growing up in very poor families with low social status experience unhealthy levels of stress hormones. Well, that makes sense. Which impair their neural development. So get this, you have these unhealthy amount of cortisol and other stress hormones. The effect is that it impairs language development and memory, and hence the ability to escape poverty for the rest of the child's life. So what we're seeing in neuroscience is that the poverty itself has a physical effect on your brain, making it more difficult for you to step out of that poverty. Did you ever wonder why people can't step out of it, why they can't get past that mental set? A lot of it is chemical. I mean, we have to be somewhat ashamed about Americans' record of failing to fight poverty. Lyndon B. Johnson declared his war on poverty 44 years ago, I remember. And contrary to cynical legend, there actually was a large reduction in poverty for the next few years in the 60s. Poverty rate fell among children from 23% to 14% in 1969. There was a real turnabout. There was a war on poverty, and it actually worked. But, you know, the right wing took over, and progress stalled thereafter. Politics shifted. Attention shifted from the suffering of the poor to the alleged abuses of welfare systems. And so it reversed. In 2006, 17% of the children in America lived below the poverty line, much more than in 1969. Living in or near poverty has always been a form of exile, of being cut off from the larger society. But the distance between the poor and the rest of the people is much greater than it was 40 years ago. And that distance is what we kind of experience, you know. If you're on one side of it, if you're on the poor side of it, you look at the other side, and the other side is right in front of you. It's right in the next apartment. It's right next door. It's right down the street. It's somebody driving past you. You know you don't have it, and there's something wrong. And you feel somewhat, many of you, feel like a broken toy. There's something wrong with me. Or you become arrogant, and you dig in, and you just get angry. So if this is laying underneath financial well-being and poverty and debt, if it's sitting underneath everybody, if everybody has some kind of fear that they're going to wind up unable to take care of themselves, do you think it's affecting you, your family? So I thought I'd open up the air today because, you know, tomorrow, Wednesday and Thursday, we won't be with you because we're going to have some remarkable reporting from the soldiers who have been in Afghanistan. I mean, there's going to be, WBAI is going to be some remarkable, remarkable radio. Be sure to tune in all day Monday and Wednesday and Thursday of this week. But how about you? How about you and your feelings about yourself and where you stand financially, and what's happening to you, and what you're afraid of? And if you're somebody who's got a house and two cars, and you have to sell a car, do you have a right to say, I'm scared? You know, whereas other people, you know, just can't even afford bus fare. Well, you do. You have a right to be afraid. And I want to use today's program for you to be able to voice some of your feelings. Our telephone number here is 212-209-2900. 212-209-2900. You know, keep in mind a lot of people who got themselves into deep, serious credit card debt, which is, I consider, one of the worst forms of debt that you have because it kind of adds up on you, have a thing called a CBD. CBD is compulsive buying disorder. Now, it's characterized by an obsession with shopping and buying behaviors that cause adverse consequences. So people who have a shopping disorder who have a lot of money, they don't have consequences. But people who are online buying things just to feel good because they feel impoverished inside, that's CBD. And CBD is found in about 6% of the U.S. population. 80% of it is female. 80% of the people with a compulsive buying disorder are women. It is frequently met with anxiety, substance abuse, and eating disorders kind of all go along with it. It's like kind of an addiction. Onset of CBD occurs in the late teens and early 20s and generally chronic. And it's there are a lot of treatments for it that are working, including Debtors Anonymous and some of the medications. But there is a thing that says, you know, I'm caught. And many of you have seen it when you just don't feel good. You go online and you buy something. You know, I'm shopping, I'm doing something, or you go out and you buy something. It's like you're trying to make up for something that's missing. 212-209-2900. Let's take one of your calls. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there. 212-209-2900. Well, we'll get our calls in here in just a minute. In India, people in debt, this is in 2004, an entire family of seven died by suicide because of the shame of the debt that they had. They left a note. It was in India, and it was in Japan as well. Debt and being in debt is kind of a shameful thing, so people see this as shameful. And they work hard to kind of avoid it every way they can. But when you crumble under not being able to pay your bills, sometimes it takes a big toll on you. I was at the, here's a letter from someone who talks about her husband who was relocated in 95. They had this job, they were relocated, they had this big house, and he lost his job. He got downsized. And then suddenly they were plunged into this world of not having to make it work or not being able to make it work. And what does that do to you? What does that do to your mind? What's it done to you? Have you been okay with it? Telephone number is 212-209-2900. Let's take one of your calls. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air. I wonder if Michael is there. Well, we're going to have to hold off on that for a while. Shannon Neal can instantly tell you the... She was reporting on these suicide rising among midlife crisis people. People with midlife crisis seem to have more and more problems dealing with financial things when things go bad financially. So people in their midlife seem to be, when they crumble, they seem to be quitting a little earlier. They don't feel that they're as strong as they used to be. There used to be a kind of a foundation that people had. You know I could get through. I know I can make it. I know I can get through the next spot. You know, that's always been something that people have been able to do. But it seems like something is wrong. It seems like people are feeling weaker than they were. They don't feel the same kind of strength that they had at recovering from some of their negative things. And it makes it more, maybe there's a kind of a weakening in the system. Maybe people can't make it. A number of people are talking about how they've been kind of driven over to Debtors Anonymous. Debtors Anonymous, you know, is a 12-step program who share the common inability to maintain financial solvency. Now, does that mean that everybody should be able to maintain financial solvency? I'm not exactly sure. But they do say that there is the Debtors Anonymous kind of helps you work out programs to work out programs to kind of get, okay, there they are, workout programs to kind of help you get through it. Debt is Anonymous is available. And it has a conference-approved book and standard literature called The Currency of Hope. You might want to check that out. 212-209-2900. Let's take one of your calls. Someone on the air right now. Hi there. You're on the air. Hello there.
Hi there.
Hi.
I was just listening to your show, and this is the first time I'm calling, so I'm just a little bit nervous. But
well, welcome to our station, and welcome to WBAI.
I've been listening to you for a long time.
How long?
Oh, a few years.
Well, great. Thanks.
I just wanted to tell you that I know exactly what you're talking about and the feeling of the fear, because you may look like you're middle class, and for instance, I have a house, a husband, child. We live in a very nice neighborhood. They revalued the neighborhood, and our taxes doubled. And we're paying so much tax now that I'm working practically just to pay the taxes, and my husband just lost his job.
Wow.
So we're,
must be scary, huh?
It's scary, and it's changed my whole way of thinking. When I go into supermarket, I pass by a lot of things that I would never think of passing by before. It's like, you know, I have that depression mentality now.
Well, when you say depression mentality, you mean the mentality of people who were alive during the Depression?
Yeah.
Or
yes.
Is it, are you depressed?
Both.
Well, both.
No.
There's a depression mentality.
You know, since my mom was a depression baby, and I guess that kind of comes through.
Well, I think that's very important. People who have grown up with depression baby parents have very often been, it's like children of the Holocaust. You know, there's a reminder that keeps coming at you over and over again about possibilities that are horrendous. And since your mother grew up with that, were you close to your mom?
Yeah. She's still around. But you know, she's doing fine because she has her pensions, and you know, she got in and out just at the right time. We're at, you know, 10 years away from retirement, and you know, we're going to have to use our retirement.
Do you feel with each other? How do you feel with your husband now? He lost his job. What was his work? What kind of work did he do?
Oh, he worked for a big corporation who just downloaded or downsized thousands and thousands. And so they're all looking for work now.
And, you know, when we hear about that, when we hear about something like a Bear Stearns crisis, that we, you know, kind of say, well, you know, big executive thing like this, how could they possibly be hurt? They all have these golden parachutes.
Oh, stuff. No. He wasn't one of those.
You know, and he was out the plane without one.
Yeah. He just got his salary, you know, enough to pay our mortgage and live.
Yeah, it's really sad. But again, in that sadness, when you're going through that, are you connected to him or are you angry with him? And I need to know this as a real question. Do you?
No, I'm not angry.
Yeah, good.
I'm angry at the company, the corporations. I'm very angry at these big Citigroup and Bear Stearns and all these big corporations that are crying when they don't get their $5 million bonus. You know, that kind of thing. And meanwhile, I'm worried about getting, you know, the can of things that are a dollar, or should I pay 89 cents for it, you know?
And it's kind of a, you know, is there anything about it? What's your name, by the way?
Debbie.
Debbie, is there anything about it? Just search for this one. And I'm not trying to sugarcoat anything, but is there anything about it that's good? Good. It's a good pause you get there. So if you think about it for a second, is there anything about it that's good? For example, do you spend more time with your husband now?
Yeah, that's one good thing. I mean, that he's home for the first time ever.
And since he's home for the first time ever, and since most of you are concerned about money, Is there anything about his being home for the first time ever that feels that you can make work into a positive, as if this is a time that we have together and this is, it may be just a short time because we're going to be right. finding work and so forth. So how do we work together? How do we be together? How can we take this as if it's a special opportunity being offered to us, at least for our intimacy? Because when you have this kind of stress on a man and on you, you almost separate from each other. But you know what you need most of all? You need to wrap each other in each other's arms. You need to hold each other. You need to be close to each other. You need to feel like you're part of this team, this family. You could get through anything if you could feel the love between the two of you. What many people do when they get struck by financial hardship is they separate. And they blame the other person, and it's like it's such a missed opportunity.
Yeah.
There's a chance here where you could connect with him in such a way that you'll be able to withstand anything. You're strong people.
I'm hoping so,
So work at it and keep solidly connected to him. It's a real, if you feel solidly connected.
Yeah. I mean, we're trying to do things in the house so that we hopefully can sell it.
Yeah, but more than just that in mind, also do things with each other that will just give you something that will increase the quality of your relationship. It's the quality of your relationship now that has the opportunity, you know? This is a big time for you.
Interesting.
Yeah, and my heart goes out to you. I wish you well, Debbie. Thanks for calling
in. Thank you. Thank you so much.
This is Armand DeMille with you at the Positive Mind 212-209-2900. So there's one of the advantages. You know, I know many people who are Buddhist, and they give up everything. They're attached to nothing. You know, they're like a Frankfurter, one with everything. It's like you're just going to be able to go through life not being attached to things. So the willful detachment is a willful impoverishment. You say, now I am going to exist on nothing. You know, I have a natural diet. I eat air. You know, I drink water. I mean, everything is down to a minimum. And it's like, how could they do that so well? How can a Buddhist live from moment to moment so well with absolutely nothing? And then some people who are cut down and they're losing, you know, and are trying to keep things up, not able to get through. What's the difference between the two? Is it religious belief or is it attitude? Well, of course, if you have children and you're trying to keep your children going and you're trying to feed them, it's attitude plus it's circumstance. But somewhere in there, it's the attitude that seems to make the difference. That poverty is not only a description of a financial situation, but it's also a description of your soul. If you're impoverished in your soul, you know, it's hard to get through anything. 212-209-2900, Armand DeMille, let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air. 212-209-2900, this is Armand DeMille. Hi there.
Yes, hi, Armand.
Hi there.
I'm so glad to get through today. I have a particular problem.
Can you turn that radio all the way down?
Yes, thank you. Hold on.
Oh, wait. We get a double feedback when we have a radio turned on.
Hello.
Hi there.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for holding on.
Sure.
I'm glad I got through today. Thank you. I met somebody recently, and she's in bad trouble. She's up to her eyeballs and credit. She has no income. She's been paying her rent with a credit card, so she's like needs to go bankrupt. She's getting evicted from her apartment, so I tried to get together a whole group of names and phone numbers for her to get some help with housing. And because she feels so threatened by all this situation, she lives across the street from the World Trade, where she saw bodies falling out of windows and stuff, so she's thoroughly traumatized. She's a brilliant, wonderful lady. And she's at her last end of the rope type of thing. Adult Protective Services stepped in, and she's scared she's going to wind up in a shelter, and she did confide in me. She told me she felt she had to commit suicide. So for 3 days now, we were supposed to meet each other, and I was supposed to take her to lunch and give her all these names and numbers for help with housing, and now she disappeared on me. She doesn't answer the phone for 3 days.
Wow.
I did look in the telephone book because I did have her last name, and I found an address. Now, what should I do with it? Should I try to go down there, even though I don't have an apartment number? Do I call the police? I don't want to traumatize
her. Well, you know, I don't know. I want to start off with the basic problem at first. You know, people who are in debt, and I've seen this a lot recently, there are ways out of it. When you owe money to the credit card companies, here's what the credit card companies say. Mm-hmm. They say, if you declare personal bankruptcy, I'm going to lose all my money. So they make deals. And there are people I know, there are firms that get hired that make deals with the credit card companies to reduce your debt and to pay your debt off on a small, long-term basis.
Mm-hmm.
So these attorneys who are, and I don't know who they are, I've kind of seen a couple of them, but I know that they're available if you search for them. There are people who are negotiating people who are in this kind of debtor situation, and even negotiating them through personal bankruptcy. I was speaking to an attorney the other day asking about personal bankruptcy and saying, how terrible is it? They said, you get over it. You know, it's like you do it, mm-hmm. you get over it. You get
right.
past it, if that's what you have to do.
Right.
Because this is the environment. So usually when somebody takes it at the level that this person is taking it, she's showing what's called a comorbid disorder. Mm-hmm. She has not only the difficulty of the spending and the money and the debt, but she also has some kind of crazy thinking going on.
Mm-hmm.
And both of those together are working where she's saying to herself, I can't stand being here. One of the things I'm thinking about doing is getting out of it, which makes all the sense in the world.
Yes.
You know what I mean? I mean, mm-hmm. of course you want out of this. What a horrible way to live. On the other hand, people do have a spirit, and they tend not to do it. They tend to try to keep themselves going. And when they do, very often they come out better than before if they get through the crisis.
Uh-huh.
So now with that all in mind, you have somebody there who you care about and who's touched your heart. If it were me, I'd be down there. You know, I'd go down. If personally, I could afford to go there because I'm not afraid to go down there. I don't know what kind of threat there is. I don't know what the dangers are. But I'd go look around first.
Okay. The thing is, I don't have an apartment number, and it's a locked building.
So I guess you'll ask people or something.
Okay, I take the chance and go down there myself.
Yeah, where are you? Where do you live?
I'm on the West 61st.
And how far away is this?
And she's down by Tribeca, across
sure.
the World Trade.
Sure, sure, sure. So it's a decent enough area. Go check uh-huh. around, see if there's something you could find. Maybe there's a hand you could put out. And, of
yeah.
course, if you don't hear from her and you were afraid that she was a threat to herself, calling the police is not such a terribly bad idea because they'll get involved in it somehow. They feel
okay.
obligated, you know?
Okay.
They feel obligated that they have to take care of it. And if you're wrong, what happens?
Okay, I just didn't want to traumatize her any more than she's already traumatized.
Yeah, but death is a big trauma, too.
Yes, yes, yes. Okay, so I should try to take the chance and go down there and see if I can find
her. I'm not saying you should. I would say I would, but that's the kind of guy I am.
Yeah, no, I'm up to doing it. I am, definitely.
Yeah, what's your name?
J.C.
J.C., I want to thank you for being so concerned and loving of people. You know,
thank you.
It's nice to hear. We need... This is we're all in the same family.
We all need each other. That's what it's about. I just got evicted because I was taking care of a friend for 40 years. And I lived in my apartment for 40 years.
And you got evicted?
I got evicted because I wasn't there. Yeah, he was checking up on me.
Yeah.
And when I left my friend to go fight the landlord, he died a week later. So I'm traumatized, too.
How did you get through it?
Well, you know what? God was on my side. A door opened up. I had checked the... I signed up for Section 8 15 years ago. I gave up on it, and I forgot about it. And last year, 1 week, the window opened up, and I jumped in, and I got another apartment, and I moved.
Amazing.
With an elevator and an incinerator and a washing machine. I'm not on a fifth-floor walk-up with a tub in the kitchen anymore. It's time for me to move, to make changes for the better.
The angels kind of open their wings, don't they?
Amen. Yes, yes, yes.
I thank you. Thank you for calling in. Sure. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're going to have to take a short break. When we come back, I'll play you some music. And, of course, we'll continue with your phone calls. Here's for you, Michael. How about see if this sounds familiar? around midnight. Autour de minuit, which is round midnight, by les Nubiens, or les Nubians, from an album called Jazz à Saint-Germain. Now, this is Armand Demille with you with A Positive Mind. You know, that's a famous tune that was done, I think, Miles Davis, probably Thelonious Monk. Very, very big on that, and it's just kind of remarkable when some new twist comes around on just about everything. I'd like to present it to you. This is Armand Demille with you with The Positive Mind. We're kind of looking at the feeling of being of money and the feeling of money scares and the feeling of poverty. We talk about poverty as being the poison, and the neuroscientists have come up with this thing about how there is impaired cortical functioning on people who have to live with the strains and stresses of it. You have to keep in mind that when you get into a financial crunch, you have to watch your own chemical brain. I mean, you have to watch your chemistry. Because if you go running on, you know, getting very hyper and big cortisol secretions and, you know, and you're very tense, in a way it cuts down on your mind's ability to solve problems. So this kind of panic response is what you need to watch for. And if in order to watch for that, you need to do something to calm yourself down, if you need to talk to somebody, if you need to consult with somebody, if you need to search out friends, if whatever you need to do to get yourself off being in panic, no matter what your financial situation is, it can be dealt with. This world will not allow it to go too far before, you know, somebody's going to step in one form or another. So I know people who are in deep, deep credit card debt who are getting themselves worked out of it and, you know, never have it happen again. I know people who are, you know, trying to keep their houses that they bought 2 years ago when maybe in the first place they couldn't afford a house. So you sell your house. I know it sounds like a horrible thing, but if you got to get out of it and go back to apartment dwelling or rental dwelling, you do it. You get through it, and you help your kids get through it as well. You say, okay, this is not the same world, and the world is, you know, maybe we've got to do it a little differently. So there shouldn't be a shame about the fact that you have to buy the 89 cents sauce as opposed to the $1.10 sauce. You know, it shouldn't be a shame. It should be, okay, here's where we are now. Here's where we cut it back a little bit. This is something that I don't think I'm just saying from words, because what I'm saying, the primary thing about this mental set of having not having enough money is that you can't impoverish your soul. You can't let it take your spirit. And you can't let it take the spirit away from the people you love and the people who need you to stay there as much intact as you can. So I think what it does and what financial woes do is they challenge your ability to be a loving human being. It says, if you are a loving human being, can you love when you're under stress? And if you could love when you're under stress, you're going to reach out your hands to people around you, to your own family, and you're going to be stay connected. Just don't disconnect. 212-209-2900, Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi there. You're on the air.
Hi, Armand.
Yes.
Wow, I'm a little bit nervous, but I definitely wanted to call in today and comment about this topic. Just to let you know a little bit about me, my name is Hilda. I'm a 20-year-old mother, two-time mother, two kids under two, and my income is very, very limited. I am a Buddhist, so when you had commented on how Buddhists pretty much live off of very little, it really hit home because all my life I've really been poor. And now that I have these kids, it's been a very big challenge because, you know, I want the best for my kids and I want to provide whatever I can for them. And it is hard to show people love and to be yourself when you're stressed about your financial situation. With me, after
how many, you're 22 just, years old, how many children?
Two children.
You're 20 years old and you have two children?
Yes, I'm 20 years old and I have two children and they're both underneath 2 years old.
So that's is there a man at home as well or are you alone?
I'm alone actually.
Hilda, how do you get through? How do you do it?
Well, I really have to be conservative with myself. After I deduct the amount of money that it takes for my immediate bills, like rent, you know, electricity and things like that, and food, I actually have about, well, I have a little bit less than $100 to spend. And no, that's for the entire month actually. But that's after budgeting and food and everything like that. And so I buy diapers and like I said, I'm a Buddhist. I just have to really depend on my faith and know that this time is only temporary. There's always the future. And besides, you know, what are material things? As long as I can provide food, provide diapers, provide clothes for my children, I'm okay, even though I do struggle with depression.
You know, I do hear your struggle with depression, but I also hear some spirit that keeps you going. Where do you think that comes from? I mean, is this a family trait? What were your parents like?
I think it is a family trait because my mother is a single mother of two as well. And she's been practicing Buddhism for 30-something years. So, you know, I was brought up on the values that, you know, material things aren't what make you happy. It's really what's inside, and your own happiness depends on yourself.
Kind of a nice gift that you were given, unfortunately, got you into a situation where there are obviously some choices that you made, and one of the choices was to have two children by the age of 20, which kind of, you know, it's kind of being in a stuck situation.
Yeah.
But, I mean, as to the rest of it, it sounds like with your heart and with the kind of love that you have inside you, your children will be able to get through this and be strong as well. You know, it's, as long as you see it, as long as you can put it in some perspective, which I think you do, I think you're going to be okay. But it is tough. I mean, it is tough, and you're teaching us how tough it could be.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I just really hope so every day. You know, I just have to redetermine that, you know, I'm going to win, and I set goals. And in 10 years, I want to have way more income so that I won't have to feel this stress and so that my kids won't know really firsthand what it's like to be underneath a stress like such limited income.
Yeah, I hear. Thank you for calling in. Thank you, Hilton.
Thank you.
Sure. Good person. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Hi there, you're on the air. 212-209-2900. Hi there, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Armand.
Hi there.
I was just calling in to, reflect on the topic.
Tell me about you.
Well, I feel definitely that it's not such a bad thing. And I think we need it as a, you know, you mentioned the Buddhist practices. And it's good for everybody.
Is it good for you?
It has been very good for me. Very good, actually. I've been in, like, bad credit debt basically since I got out of high school.
Mm-hmm. And how do you get through? What do you do? What do you just say to yourself? Well, that's the way it is?
Well, I actually now have a business, and I just found ways to generate money, you know, through painting and stuff.
Mm-hmm. And so are you still in bad credit card debt, or do you give that up?
Well, I'm working on it. I'm working on it. And I haven't been able to use credit, for over 10 years, and I've learned to live without it. I find a lot of benefits sometimes. But you just, it's humbling. That's all.
Yeah, it is humbling in many ways. But, you know, it sounds like it may be humbling, but you're kind of proud of yourself for having worked out of it, huh?
Yeah, definitely. I found a lot of ways around the system, and I'm doing pretty good. Well, you know, I'm keeping my head afloat, and even, like, just today, you know, there's, like, less cars on the road, it feels like, every day, you know. I'm out on Long Island.
Yeah, I hear. So as long as there's a spirit that you can keep going and looking at it and saying, okay, I'll get through this. I'm glad that people hear you talking. What's your name?
It's James.
James, you know, it's the kind of spirit that we're talking about. It's like, yes, it hurts. Yes, it keeps me down. And yes, I can get through it. And I think
people need to know.
You know, a lot of people don't think they can get through anything. You know, some people consider the loss of a house a disaster. It's only a house. You know, it's only a house. It's a shell. They consider the loss of something, having to go to public school, a disaster. It's public school. Everything is okay. I mean, it's tough stuff, but we can get through it, and we can get through it with each other's help. So I want to thank you for calling in, James. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Alma.
Sure. 212-209-2900. You're hearing stories of people who are having, you know, difficulty and getting through the difficulty. And yes, you could hear them beaten down. You could hear the beating on the head. Again, it's do you have a family? Do you have a voice? Do you have an extension? Do you have places you could be? Do you have any love in your life? And are you, when you're under stress, do you hold back handing out, putting out your hand to other people? That's the question. Because it's when you're under stress, you have much more, there's more time than ever to put out your spirit. You need to reach it out. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. Armand DeMille, hi, you're on the air.
Yes, Armand, hi. My name is Israel. I've been listening to you for years.
Hello, Israel. Nice. Thanks for calling in.
Oh, yeah, I got through for the first time. I want to tell you, above the problems of the day, that you are really a gift to me. This is my reaction. It's not only for the content of what you're saying, but the way you're presenting yourself and the way you're being with people is really a gift. And I love your music. I had the same association, like you played the saxophone jazz.
Yes.
A very similar association I make with the voice of the cello. I love the cello, especially some of the, I'll cut it short. It is very close to the human voice, and it's a very kind human voice, and it's the same sort of thing as your saxophone.
I want to ask you one thing about this.
Yes.
I'm going to try to, it's a curiosity I have. When you say you love the radio program and you love what I do on the radio program, I also assume generally when people say that, that there is a part of themselves that are the very thing that they admire. What is it that you admire in my relationship to people?
I have had, what I admire is, I wish my father had been with me.
Yeah. Absolutely.
The way you're being with people.
That's
in a nutshell.
Somewhere in your heart, there was a spot that needed a parental figure who was kind, who could have seen you the way you are and embraced you the way you are. And part of what you tap in with me is, I'm okay that way, but it really fills that empty spot. How are you with people? Do you give to people what you wish your dad would have given to you?
I have two faces. One of them is harsh to people, and one of them is very good to people. I have... my throat is tightening up. No.
Okay, so I'll tell you what. Wait. Just slow down, and I'm going to stay with you. You don't have to rush.
Okay.
If your throat's tightening up, it just means that there's a little nervousness, but there's also a tear that's breaking through it. So take your time. I'm yours.
Right. So would you repeat the question, please?
You have a harsh part of you, and you have a loving part of you.
Yes.
When you feel that harsh part of you come out with people, how do you feel? I mean, do you observe it? Do you see it?
When I have the harsh part come through is I feel like, I've had these tough times. How come these people have it easy?
It's kind of a resentment, anger.
Yes. Yeah. You know, I have had it tough. Try to give it to other people, too. I have unfortunately been a little bit that way with my son. That's what's giving me the regret.
Now, it gets to a point where you get to see it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think being able to see it is such a difference. You know, it makes such a big difference to be able to see it and to know it. Because any point that you stop it, any point that you turn that off, at any point that you just stop and say, that's enough of that harshness. From here,
yeah.
I've got to take it in a different place.
I thought we were going to talk about money.
Well, you see, money and love is the same thing.
Yes.
It's the same talk. It's exactly.
You know, when you said childhood poverty, it hit me in a different way. I have very limited means now, but when I was a growing child, my family was very rich. But they used money to control.
Yes.
And
that's true poverty. That's where you really get impoverished in the soul. Like you said,
yes.
A dad who couldn't really love you, couldn't see you.
It's very complicated. I was born in Germany. We ran just before the Holocaust. We had to split the family in two different compartments to get out of Germany. And then my father wasn't with us. He had to go someplace else. I was with uncles. it was a real, if I had the skills to write a book, I would write a book.
Mm-hmm. I hear an amazing thing. I thank you so much for calling in, and thanks for listening in.
Thank you for being there.
Sure, sure. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Time for one more call. Hi there, you're on the air. 212-209-2900. Hi there, you're on the air.
Hi, Armand.
Hi there.
This is Heidi.
Hello, Heidi.
Poverty, for me, though I cannot say I deal with it perfectly well, I deal with it better. I've been poor. Well, I will say this, it's poverty. The attitude of poverty is really a state of mind. I used to feel poorer than I feel now. I actually like the simplicity of my life. The only time that poverty overwhelms me is when it gets in between medical care that I need, something that might involve another person that what you love, what you can't give them, what you would like to give them. But poverty has helped me to really appreciate others' poverty, which is, you know, I consider the poverty around the world far worse than anything I have ever experienced. And I'm actually grateful now to be in the, I guess, financial status that I'm in, which sounds a little weird, but when I was younger, I have an older sister. When I was younger, she married into a wealthy situation, and I thought that's being a young teenager, seeing that, I thought, oh, that's what I have to do too. But I got sick, and so all my ambitions and my efforts really were not going to be realized the way I wanted, and for a while, I was very stressed in my poverty because I wanted something else. But I reframed it over the years. And for the most part, I'm pretty satisfied with what I have in my life. And I feel rich, just not in monetary things, but rich in things that you cannot buy.
Absolutely. Absolutely, and it happens with attitude. It happens with reframing, like you said, in your mind. So sometimes, you know, we want to feel like children, and when we want to feel like children, we look at the dark side of things, and we figure we're buried and we have no opportunities. Other times, we want to step up and we want to be joining everyone else. You know, we want to be like part of the world. And when you become part of the world, you could walk without money with your head, you know, up. You could be just as strong as everyone else, and you could be putting out that loving energy.
Yeah.
As you do, as I hear it, Heidi, you know?
How do you know that?
Because I hear it in your voice.
Oh, wow. You're really amazing. You've said things before to me, and I can never understand how you figure these things out.
Yeah.
One of the things that I do appreciate, you mentioned the other man said he loves your show, and you asked him, you know, how does he identify that with personally? You know, I love to learn, and for me, it's a gift to be educated via the radio. It's such a great gift. How rich it is that I can put my radio on and be informed on such wonderful things that, by my own resources, I wouldn't, you know, not just monetary, but even my ability to learn. It's easier when someone teaches by mouth for me than to read a book. So
I know exactly what you mean. I was talking to a cab driver the other day who was a big fan of WBAI, and he said, it's the university on the air. He said, it's such a wonderful thing. And that's why I love to present you with so much information, teaching you as much as I could, because we're all in it together. Thank you. Thank you for calling in, Heidi. Hey, this is Armand DeMille with you at Deposit of Mine. I got to get going. I won't be back with you on Wednesday or Thursday. Do tune in. Listen to some of that spectacular programming we have coming up. I'll be back with you next Tuesday. If you could go to thepositivemind.com if you want to learn more about hear the show today if you want to learn more about what we're doing.